Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we are back with another edition of the Daily Dots. Chase here, riding with you solo here on Monday, April 15th, tax day. So to all who celebrate tax day, hope it was a good one. We had a lot of fun in the markets today. It was not boring. I will run through that and plenty to talk about just on that. But I got a couple other things we'll get to as well. So for the indexes, the S&P was down 1.2%. The NASDAQ 100, think of the QQQ, 1.65%, and then down a little after hours as well. Small caps were down about 1.5%. Definitely of note, the Magnificent Seven stocks were down 2.37%. So it was actually tech that led the way to the downside, which for obvious reasons is notable after everything we've experienced in the last few years. Equal weight was down about 0.86%. So for once, equal weight kind of picked up some decent ground on Mag 7. The VIX now carries a 19 handle for spot VIX, and even the front month VIX contract is at 18. So decent little pop in vol today. Some other notables, regional banks were down today, but not by much, including after hours, down about 0.7. But given everything, that was to me a little surprising. ARK was down about 4.5, so not a lovely day for that. Bitcoin actually down. Last I saw was about, let's go find it. Last I saw, I think it was down about 5%. Yeah, I'm showing 3.9 now. Bond yields, first of all, the dollar. The dollar was up 2.21%, so the rampage higher continues for the dollar. And I think that's not a small part of why stocks are getting hit. The dollar breaking above 105 and doing so with some follow through and it being convincing, not great for stocks. Neither are bond yields. The 2-year at one point was up like 8, 9, 10 basis points, and it closed only up about 2. So it backed off a good bit. And I do think that's what helped regional banks have a decent day. So that's going to be interesting to watch moving forward, because I still think regional banks can take a lot of pain here. Now, what it will probably take is one coming out in earnings and with some ugly numbers, or you know, a statement that people don't appreciate about where their positioning is. But given where everything else is with rates, with where we think rate cuts are going to be, all of this, like, it just makes sense for me for one of the regionals to kind of show some problems all of a sudden, and for that to sort of spread throughout that complex with. So like a risk off week or two, but we'll see. Maybe not. Oil was flat on the day. Gold was kind of all over the place, but it ended up over 1%. It to me, gold and the dollar are both kind of becoming and metals in general, but sort of the hedges that the haven of last resort to have stocks go down and bonds go down. Bonds not be the safe haven. Obviously, Bitcoin not be the safe haven. There's kind of not much left other than the dollar and metals. And at least for today, that included copper and aluminum. There were some Russian sanctions towards metals, industrial metals, that kind of helped boost price today. But regardless, having a dollar up, you know, rates up, stocks down day, and then to have, you know, gold, silver, and copper kind of ripping is noteworthy. That helped keep commodities more or less flat on the day, which is a big deal given where everything else was on the day. One thing I want to talk about is Tesla and Apple. So Tesla was down basically, if you include after hours, about 6%, and Apple down about 2.2%. So pretty big moves down. Now Tesla, I would say largely because it's, as you may have seen, they announced a 10% workforce cut. So 10% of their global workforce going away. That's, you know, that tells you whenever you're price doing price cuts and you're letting staff go, like, you're probably not growing, right? And this is in an environment where the U.S. economy is red hot, China's bottoming, global manufacturing is bottoming. And places like Germany that have been just really beaten up, not able to do much manufacturing production, all of a sudden really starting to pick up. And then your Tesla is letting 10% of their workforce go. And if you look at the price chart, to me, the kind of 163.5 level is a kind of a big deal on Tesla. Now, so is the kind of like 158 level. So we're kind of into this range where you better, like, if you don't bounce on Tesla, it will be a kind of a secular breakdown in my view. Like, it'll be a big deal. So we're at a bounce or die area there. Apple, kind of same thing. Like, we just saw the report come out kind of like early this morning that their sales were down 10%. The actual headline was that Apple's global iPhone shipments fell 9.6% in the first quarter. Obviously, iPhone is kind of the bread and butter of Apple. They'll be able to make up for some of that, you know, 10% quarterly pain with, you know, boosting services income a little bit here and there, like stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the iPhone is the prime mover for them. So the fact that you're seeing that bad of a breakdown in the first quarter, not great. And again, just like Tesla, that tells me you're just not really growing, and you're a growth company with a growth valuation. So those two will remain front and center to me. Obviously, we can't talk about any of this without talking about the supreme leader of NVIDIA, which was down over 2% today. Again, kind of back at some like really important technical levels, like so many things are. And while I'm on that, now all the indexes are below the 50-day moving average. And I find that most important for the S&P and for the QQQ, because S&P bounced off of it Friday and survived. The S&P did the same thing. The S&P actually bounced so high off of it that it got back up to the 33-day today, and then just, you know, plummeted the rest of the day. You pull up the chart on those two, S&P or the Qs, their uptrend line's broken, and they've flashed below both the 33-day, which is something I use. I don't think anyone else uses, but that's okay, and the 50-day. So technically speaking, like, you know, we've broken the uptrend for the moment. Now, you know, you're in like a 3-4% drawdown, so it's not really that big a deal. And I think a lot of people are going to argue, and very much perhaps rightfully so, it's something I've been nervous about, was, hey, it's tax day. That is a liquidity problem. That a lot of bank reserves come out of the system on this day, this week, which is a liquidity draw. And if you look at historic seasonality around this period, it is a bad period for stocks. It tends to be a bad day for stocks. So today could just be that. But what I will say is, the one reason I think it could be more is something I've been hammering at, kind of boy who cried wolf style almost, for the last few months, is all the excess is built up in systematic strategies, be that commodity trading advisors, CTAs that just kind of do momentum-based futures trading, vol control, there's, you know, dispersion trade, there's all kinds of different like small arbitrages between different trends that have all piled into the same short vol trades that now all of a sudden you have volatility popping up significantly in the last two trading days. So I would assume a lot of these systematic strategies that are all, you know, short vol as a matter of practice are having to go and buy some vol. They're having to let go some underlying. We know dealers came into today negative gamma, which means they had to sell the underlying indexes in order to keep their books balanced, so to speak. Vol control had to sell today because we were down over 1%. So now all of a sudden, all these people that have been buying from each other steadily in kind of a feedback loop for months are probably starting to sell. And the point of that is, like, that can feed on itself and it can keep going. So I think the geopolitical stuff that happened on Friday, and then the just market structure stuff that happened today, obviously combined with the liquidity problem that is April 15th. I think it could have combined into something that becomes a self-reinforcing loop to the downside. Now, I'm not saying we're going to crash 30-40% or anything, but like, I don't think a 10% pullback is out of the question at this point. Obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if we just wake up tomorrow and stocks are up 1% and, you know, we just go up to new all-time highs. Like, I don't think anyone would be surprised by that. But we know there are some preconditions where there is some fragility, where if all the CTAs and vol control have to sell down a bunch of exposure and a bunch of other systematic strategies not mentioned there, and have to do a bunch of hedging by buying vol or selling underlying equity, like, we can have that 10% correction without a problem. And the reason that's important to me is not so we can all get some tactical trade correct on, you know, sidestepping a 10% drawdown and then jumping back in. That's not what it's about. To me, it feeds back into macro. If we're going to have the economy slow down and the Fed actually be able to cut, it's going to take asset prices moving lower, which some we've talked about a ton. So if this is real, if stocks can, you know, have a 10% pullback, then that now all of a sudden you're kind of laying out the conditions for it actually making sense to have some cuts. You know, we've been arguing essentially all year, it makes no sense to even talk about cuts in reality because the economy's red hot, inflation is going to reaccelerate. And that was a lonely position whenever the market was saying seven cuts and all the investment banks were tripping over themselves to talk about, you know, we're going to have a cut in May and June and July and August. Like, Goldman Sachs at one point, you know, they had us starting in March and doing every meeting for the rest of the year. Well, now it looks like we probably won't start until September, maybe July, but even that is like not well priced anymore. The first time you have actually have a cut fully priced is September. So we just keep kicking the can to the right and pushing all these rate cuts out. And to me, that wasn't that hard to figure out. Even when we were at that seven cut mania peak, because asset prices were going to prop up the economy, we're going to push up inflation. So if you can reverse that, obviously you can kind of go the other way. And it's not just stocks, but that stocks, again, are the prime mover of all of this. But last month we had, if you use FHFA, we had real estate prices go negative for the first monthly time in a while. Obviously bonds are not doing well. 60-40 is up like 3% or something at this point on the year. I mean, even the Qs themselves are up, I think, 5.8% on the year. So you're like, if you go to that 10% drawdown on equity, you're probably negative year to date. You know, maybe that's mid Q2. Treasuries are going to be negative year to date, and another bad month or two in home prices, which is not implausible with the long bond where it is. And now you're staring like the three major asset classes being negative, like kind of in the face. And then you wait in a month, 2 months, 3 months, and then if it kind of holds down there, that's when you would see it flow into the macro data. At least historically, that's roughly, it kind of averages out to a 2 month lag from asset prices to the economy. So let's say this keeps going into May, and you have kind of an asset price negative moment in May, then by say July, that's when I would expect like, okay, well now you can actually get things like retail sales and industrial production. You know, the keystone, the obvious big one, employment actually start to weaken like a little bit, you know, enough for it to make sense to start talking about cuts. All this is very, very big picture. It's very contingent on tons of different stuff happening. But to me, like, I'm always trying to think 6-9 months in the future, what I think is going to happen versus what the Fed thinks is going to happen. When everyone thought we were going to have seven cuts, I said, I'm going to fade that until we get down to 0 to 2, somewhere in there. That's when I want to like re-examine. Well, now we're down to a little under 2 cuts being priced. And notably, we have UBS strategists talking about today, like, oh, we might have to push rates from 5.5 up to 6.5. So we have a major investment bank, major global investment bank talking about, oh, well, maybe we'll have to raise rates 4 more times. Like, okay, like that's a bit of a shocking headline to see after all I've heard is how many cuts we're going to do for so long. And they laid out all the reasons why, and it's all the reasons we've been telling you for the last 6 months why things can happen. But now whenever everyone comes over to my side of the boat or starts to, like, that's when I take notice that I should be examining the other side, you know, a lot more carefully. The last thing I've wanted to do for the last 6 months is buy, you know, short-term treasuries, but bet in any way on cuts. I wanted to do quite the opposite. But now that it, you know, we could see a pretty big rush into shorting bonds, into all the inflation trades, like buying oil and commodities. If you get a stampede back in your direction, and especially if we completely price out cuts for 2024 and get 2025 cuts to being also smalls, where everyone's on board with the second wave of inflation and the red hot economy and the neutral rate's higher. That's another thing I would love to see to signal that would be essentially everyone at the Fed suddenly agreeing with me that, yeah, the neutral rate's a lot higher. That's when I would want to go buy, you know, 2-year treasuries or things of that nature. And just kind of carry less equity risk, because you'd be running into a softening economy being a bit of a risk. So I know that's a lot, and that's a long-winded view of kind of the last 6 months and the next 6 months, but that was what was on my mind today. But that's it for today. I don't think I mentioned it, but we had retail sales today, which was red hot, like 3x what was expected, essentially, is what we got. Literally on X Auto, X Gas for Control Group, which is the one I pay attention to. It's the one that takes a good bit of stuff out, but gives you a cleaner look, because a lot of those numbers are very volatile. It takes that stuff out to give you a very clean look of the consumer, and that's the one that feeds into GDP. We were expected to get 0.4, we got 1.1, so almost 3x expectations. And that's back to very strong growth year over year. 3-month annualized, very, very strong, like, yeah, however you want to slice it. And this is after 2-week retail sales prints. So you kind of had 3 hot inflation prints in a row, hotter than expected, but you also had 2 weaker than expected retail sales prints. So it was like the last thing for the doves at the Fed to point to, like, yeah, but retail sales, like, maybe the economy's slowing. And then you get this monster beat on retail sales today. So now you've had 3 straight hot inflation prints, and you've just got a red hot print of retail sales. Tell you the consumers, I'll put it to you like this. It was strong enough for the Atlanta Fed to raise their first quarter GDP from 2.4 to 2.8. That's how monstrous of a retail sales print we had. So there you go. I mean, if the Fed thinks, you know, trend growth is about 1.75, and we're going to print a 2.8. And it wasn't that long ago that Waller was pointing to it being 2.1. Like, hey, this is pretty slow. Like, this is what we want to see. Well, nope, sorry, man. It's 2.8, and inflation keeps beating, and you can't slow the economy with 5.5% rates, even though you're telling me those are very restrictive rates, but they're not restricting anything other than, you know, small banks and small businesses and young consumers. On aggregate, not doing the job. So they're going to have to kind of go back to the drawing board. I posted on Twitter today for the next summary of economic projections from the Fed, which we'll get in June. Is the question last time was, is it still 3 cuts priced in from the Fed, or are they going to maybe bump down to 2? I think a lot of people are viewing the next one as like, oh, they'll probably go to 2, right? Now, to me, the question is now, is it 1 or 2 cuts? And before June, it could be bad enough to where is it 1 or 0? And we've seen individual members of the FOMC already go to the 1 and 0 camps. So it's not impossible to have more people run to 1 or 0 and even have, you know, the median dot be 1, but barely. So just the things to keep in mind. And hey, if they go to 1 at the Fed, they pull 2 out, then again, that's time to start thinking about the other side, think about the weakness, to think about betting on short-term interest rates falling, you know, AKA betting on cuts again. This is all sort of like a weird you know, exercise. It's almost like looking in the gears of a watch and trying to look at what the big gears are doing to the small gears to try and figure out what comes down the line. But that is, to me, what macro is. So this time I'm for real. That is all for today, but I'll be back with you tomorrow. I think we might have Zach on tomorrow. It'll be just kind of a game time decision the rest of the week because he's out of town. But I'll be back with you solo tomorrow talking about all this, or we'll be tag teaming it as usual. Until then, you can download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com. Cheers.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.